Ladies and gentlemen, emergency. Emergency. Red alert. This is an emergency recording of WTF Prime Time! I am here with Gog Dog.
Hi.
And we're all alone because everyone else has been infected with dark energon. We're yes. The only ones on the entire... I think, okay, glancing at Twitter, we're the only ones on the entire internet right now, Sunday, October 9th, 2011, at about 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Gog Dog and I are the only people on the entire internet who have not watched Part 3 of One Shall Rise, because Singapore leaked that like a bunch of jerks. So, Gog, are the zombies beating at the door here? Are we safe in the bunker?
Yeah, Toby is keeping them at bay. He's already drug in a couple of stray thumbs and fingers, but for the most part, I have remained safe. I have it well boarded up. All my windows have giant pieces of dresser and plyboard and everything that I could manage to nail to the side of it. But
yeah,
it sucks too, because like I was hoping that I could get Aaron and TJ in here, and I go to reach for Aaron and his arm just came off, and I think I see a one-armed Aaron out there moaning brains outside. But
yep,
sorry Aaron, I tried to save you, but it was your own choice.
And
you didn't make it here in time.
I saw TJ shaped bite marks on the side of his cheek. So
oh man.
Man,
fanfic writers.
The even team just consumed itself. I mean, just FYI, Aaron and Omegas are not here because we decided with the... today was kind of first world problem-esque friggin' crazy. Because yesterday, part two aired. And I watched it yesterday. And I thought, okay, cool, I'll wait a week. This morning, part three comes up on YouTube. And Gog Dog and myself, we have not watched One Shall Rise part three. I almost did. Aaron and Omegas have, and honestly, I can't blame them, because a lot of people don't know how to keep their goddamn mouths shut about spoilers around here. So, they inoculated themselves, i.e. they were infected. So, Gog and I are going to record a prime time about One Shall Rise Part 2, where nobody involved knows a single thing about what happens in Part 3. That's what the purpose of this podcast right now is. So, if you're listening, do not worry. If you've been waiting for the hub to air it, do not worry. We are not going to say a single thing about Part 3 because we have not watched it yet. We're going to have to bust out the antibiotics and vaccinate ourselves after this is done, most probably, before the plague spreads underneath the door. But don't worry. This is going to be spoilerless for Part 3. This is going to, however, be hell of spoilerful for One Shall Rise Part 2, because, Gog, lots happened in Part 2, I think.
Yeah, sure did.
Now I've got some stuff written down here because, you know, Aaron, you know, may he not decay too fast. Usually writes a lot of stuff down, and I thought I should, you know, in his honor, take some notes.
In loving memory.
Yes, Aaron. So I wanted to follow up on something we talked about last time. This episode had another smooth last time on transition. Although the clips they showed from the last episode I thought were kind of funny, because when they have Ratchet describing Unicron, he's replying to Miko saying unicorn. So Ratchet's like Unicron! And I kind of
I noticed that too.
I imagine the person watching the episode for the first time going like, you know what? Okay, I guess that's his name. And then someone coming on TFW going like, yo guys, tell me more about Unicron! So yeah, it again flowed directly from the last episode into the opening of this one. So it looks like this is definitely built to be cut together as a feature length thing in syndication.
Yeah, and if for nothing else, it also all this appears to be happening within the span of several hours.
Yeah.
So all of these last four episodes, if at the very least, they're all taking place in the same day. So. It keeps that flow up and actually makes it feel like that time frame is realistic and not just episode numbers.
Exactly. And also it makes it like so much more rewarding, the week long wait between parts that we once upon a time had, with this three parter, because it really feels like, you know, I'm getting to jump right back in the action of what I was left hanging on last week. The next thing, I'm starting to run down my topic list here. I'm still in Henshin Justice Radio mode. I was just talking about Yamato, and I ran through all my points at once there. So I got to remember, this is prime. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little bit worried. They're scraping at the windows. Gog, have you got a part of the episode you'd like to bring up now?
Yeah, going off of some of the stuff we've been talking about how all these kind of Unicron being the Earth thing, and one thing that actually kind of made me just stare at the screen for a while was when, I think it was Ratchet, when he was going over the consequences of Unicron being the Earth. It was basically word for word what I had said months ago. Like, this is what the consequences of Unicron being the Earth would be. You could never fully destroy him. You could never allow him to fully wake up. So he would always have to be in this weird in-between state, and in order to not destroy the human race and not to have Unicron wake up. And it, like, I just remember us talking about it. Like, how crazy would that be? And, yeah, and we discussed it for a while. And not only did we find out last week that happened, but Ratchet basically went over point for point all the points that we made. And I was like, seriously? It's almost as if, like, either we're on the same track as the writers, or the writers listen to an episode of ours and are like, oh, they don't think we have the balls? Okay.
We'll show them. We ain't pussies.
And almost took lines directly from our previous shows and put them in the show. It was just very satisfying to me, because it was just stuff that literally, like, points we were bringing up humorously, like, this is what would happen if this was real. And they're covering that almost in the same bullet point type format as we were, and it was just something really satisfying about that, because it's just like, we were talking about this humorously, and Ratchet's like, this is what the problem is. And, like, covers everything, and I don't know. There was a bit of a, like, wow, seriously, this is awesome.
There's something kind of satisfying in it, too, because it was like, I remember when we were talking about that, we were also going, like, but we gotta remember, we're speculating, we gotta steel ourselves for the fact it may not go anywhere near what we're talking about, and we gotta remember it can still be cool if it doesn't go onto this vein that we all think it might go onto, and then it went onto that vein. So it's kind of a nice feeling to actually successfully speculate. I see why people do it again. I understand again.
The
stakes are pretty cool in this thing, and I can already kind of, you know, if they follow through with what their plan is to make Unicron dormant again, that totally also opens up some real easy storylines for future seasons of other Transformers coming to Earth to try to kill Unicron, you know, because they're like, hey, look, what's of more value, one race of people or a dark god that could consume everything?
Sure.
And I could totally see some amazing conflicts happening over that in future seasons. When Prime was fighting all these Unicrons, I think they kind of answered one of our questions from last week by clarifying a little bit, and it was a specific word, which was manifestations. They kept saying these are manifestations of Unicron, which I thought was a great term for what those things were. And it was also, I think, at some point clarified that Unicron has not yet fully awakened. So that sort of answers the question of, if Unicron can make copies of himself out of the Earth, why doesn't he just close up the Earth, like, around Prime or something? It's like, because he's not actually... This is just Unicron when he's, like, starting to stir. Because he is not just a giant being. He is an extra sensory, extra perceptual entity of destruction. So I like that they sort of, with that word manifestations, clarified that Unicron, this is like Unicron when he's daydreaming, pretty much. It's just there's all these copies of him showing up in these effigies. And I love that as the fight went on, they got bigger and bigger. And that it wasn't that there was just one giant Unicron. It was that there were, like, three giant Unicrons wandering around.
Yeah, I like that, too, because when Megatron saved Prime, he toppled the big one. And then you see the big one reforming, and it's like, oh, man, this big one is just going to keep reforming. Then, it, you know, cut to a few minutes later when Megatron says, you know, I'll keep it busy. And he's fighting, like, four of the giant ones at the same time. It's like, oh, man. So, and I think that's also just showing that this is going to progressively get worse and worse until there's more things to worry about than just manifestations.
Yeah, and it also, like what I was talking about before with them making Unicron out to be more of an entity than like just a single creature. This was a great way, I think, to represent that like, just, you know, when he's not even awake, there are fully conscious just like manifestations of his power and his mind just sort of blipping into existence all over the place. It was really cool, I thought. And also led to several really cool action sequences. But the manifestation thing, I think really cleared up where Unicron is right now in the story and you know why he may or may not be doing certain things. At least to me, it did. Any other thoughts on that, or have you got another point you'd like to bring up?
No, I don't. Not really much on that. It was interesting to see where they were going with it as far as making it bigger and just him continuing to be able to make them bigger and stronger and more multiples of them. And
yeah.
But I think by the end of this episode, hopefully that is kind of gone, because it's like, all right, we know we can't deal with this anymore.
Yeah.
So we need to get to the source of this, because it's just going to keep getting worse.
Oh,
so.
There was also that great line that Bumblebee made a noise, and then Prime's like, no, that's not the Unicron. Because I like that, just seeing this giant mountain-sized one, Bumblebee is thinking like what we're all thinking, like, oh, that must be the Unicron. And then Prime's like, no, that's just another manifestation. I was like, oh.
Yeah. As far as another point, I kind of like how, like, like how we had talked about before, I had brought up that with Prime doing the whole one-on-one with Megatron, like, I need to handle this alone, and almost getting killed, and Bulkhead having to come in at the last minute and save him, and them having to pull him back through the space bridge, not even able to walk.
Yeah.
And then the same thing with this. It's like, well, Unicron wants me. I have to do this alone. And again, basically almost ends up dead, and Bulkhead comes in and he's like, Prime's like, did you hear my order that I gave Ratchet? Did he relay it? And they're like, yeah, we don't care, because you keep almost getting yourself killed. And then Prime's basically like, yeah, I guess you're right. wasn't the smartest thing. So I don't know. I keep getting a kick out of how Prime keeps charging head first, saying, no, this is my fight. And then everybody else is like, Prime, all right. Can't keep doing this, man. Seriously, like, we obey your orders, but you know, we kind of need you around. So,
once again, with this being similar to that sequence with Megatron, I was also once again really, really worried that one of the Unicron effigies was going to kill a character or seriously injure a character. Like, I was just waiting for Bulkhead to get stepped on or something, or RC to get like speared, and I was like, ah! Especially when the giant Unicron was actually connecting hits with them, I was like. I was like, I'm so happy that you survived a mountain punching you, because I was really worried.
Yeah, that was nothing really of any consequence happened. But when you see Bumblebee and Bulkhead just literally driving as fast as they can, and then for the giant manifestation to just swipe them and knock them about another 200 meters, it was like, oh. They're kind of out of their class right now.
I felt even worse for RC, because she was in, like, motorcycle mode, and then Unicron's, like, giant stab death arm just, like, swatted her, and I was like, holy crap.
I thought he was going to miss, and then he hit her, and she went flying. I was like, oh, man.
I was like, RC is also pretty effing tough, that something the size of a mountain just backhanded her, and she didn't go to pieces. That's you know, much applause there. going off that, actually, I just wanted to just about the action set piece there. A lot of the action pieces this episode revolved around the Unicron manifestations, and I thought they were fantastic action sequences. That long, you know, the one shot following Prime with the camera style thing in the opening of him fighting all the Unicrons was pretty cool. But it was, I think, really outclassed once the other Autobots showed up, and then it became less of, you know, one Prime fighting all these Unicrons, and it became the Autobots trying to kind of fight the Unicrons while getting to higher ground. And there were some great moments in there, like Prime, you know, driving through one in truck mode. And that moment when the first mountain-sized Unicron shows up, and you see it from the POV of within the driver's seat of one of the Autobots.
Mm-hmm.
And that just got across the sheer scale of what was going on so well. And going off that as well, when Megatron was you know, blitzing, like, blitzkrieging, like, four of them, and, you know, flying around them, shooting at them, that sequence was like, so cool. It made me think of a lot of video game sequences that I've seen. Like, just, like, being the one, like, this tiny little ship flying around these enormous mammoths. Like, I suppose an easy comparison would be Shadows of the Colossus, almost.
Yeah.
Only he's like a flying fighter jet, and also never once got hit. I was like, okay, Megatron is still clearly
Well, even when the Autobots were on the ground, like driving between his legs, I mean, it was very evocative of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the flying mode was more of like a, I don't know, some sort of sci-fi space shooter game where you're having to shoot out a giant boss. But yeah, I mean, all that stuff to me was, I felt the same way. It was very evocative of a video game, and it's like, oh man, now that would actually be a really cool moment if they were to translate that to a game. But
easy video game levels, just like fight the Unicrons.
Mm-hmm. One thing about the fight too is I didn't notice it myself, and I forgot to look when I watched it a second time. But from the primetime thread from last week, from Primetime 20, Run Shall Rise Part 1, Shockwave 1138 had brought up that whenever Prime brought out his blade on his arm, the tip was still broken off from when he had fought Megatron in One Shall Fall.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. So, if that's true, that's really cool that they've kept that mm-hmm. damaged model through the season finale.
Well, I when I was watching this one, because we got some really good shots of Optimus Prime, and it showed, you know, how scuffed he was after the fight with the opening fight with the Unicrons, I was distinctly remembering at BotCon, the Prime team who was there had said they actually had modeled layers on the character model so that they could be peeled back and given really nice amounts of battle damage. And
that's cool.
I think it's really paying off in these episodes. You're really able mm-hmm. to see that, especially on Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was some cool ass fighting. Have you got another point you'd like to bring up?
Yeah, Megatron.
Yeah, I have a couple notes on Megatron.
Yeah, I'm again not having seen part three. I'm really curious to know where this is going to go, and it's also they didn't take the obvious route of Megatron saying no, Unicron betrayed me, so I want revenge, and then at the last minute, Megatron trying to one up Prime by stabbing in the back. He's basically telling him exactly what he's going to do beforehand. Like, look, we're not trying to do any type of permanent truce here. This is something that's mutually beneficial to both of us. And when we're done, I'm going to resume my conquest of Earth and we're going to be right back to where we were. But right now we both need each other. And mm-hmm. that was a very interesting, reaching out of the hand from the bad guy, because that would almost be something that you'd see from the good guy. Like, look, can we put aside this fighting? We can keep going the way we've been going later, but right now we need each other. But instead it was Megatron that showed up offering it and said, look, when we're done, I'm gonna, you know, I still have every intention of destroying you, but mm-hmm. And I still have every intention of ruling this planet, but it's going to be on my own terms. And it's, I don't know, I like it. I also like how they didn't drag on the whole Megatron trying to snivel up the Unicron. It was just,
mm-hmm.
he tried to sell himself. He's like, look, I can be useful to you. We'll do this together. Unicron's like, nah, I, you're an ant. I don't even care. Like, who are you? And Megatron's like, no. That's it. You are now my enemy, and I already know now that this little vision that I had of us working together it's not gonna work out. So I'm gonna side with my enemy, we're gonna take you down, and then I'm gonna keep going about my business.
I'm really curious about the depth of his motivations, because I'm gonna admit I found it slightly jarring that he went from that scene of him trying to sell himself to Unicron right to helping the Autobots out. It's just the transition happened so fast. I was kind of, I think it would have been, it almost would have been more effective if somehow the previous scene had been maybe just slightly less, and I hate saying this because I actually liked it, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. It felt weird for it to go from such a kind of like this grovel to the dark god, you know, I will do anything for you, Lord Unicron. Thing straight over to I'm gonna help you guys kill it. Like it was a bit of a jarring turn. I don't mind it, but it
right.
I can't deny that it really was a 180.
The reason why it worked for me is because Unicron had the first thing that he said was there's a follower of Primus on this planet, and I'm gonna take him out now. And it's almost like Megatron's like, oh really? And it just seemed to me like that would be. That's the ultimate kind of slap in the face to Unicron. Well, I'm going to go side with him. We're going to take you down together. That's how it worked in my mind, because I could see Megatron just not him just being so offended, he's like, well, screw it. This thing, that you're so offended by his presence on your crust of your planet, I'm going to go and I'm going to side up with him right now, and we're going to take you down together. I don't need you. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. It worked for me. Because I could see Megatron being so prideful that he literally was like, oh.
Yeah. Well, they also had, I think, a decent motivation in there, like an additional motivation in that Megatron was like, I want there to be a planet for me to rule when this is all over.
I thought that was a good line from RC, too. Oh, yeah. She's like, are you going to do to Earth like you did to Cybertron?
Yeah, and he's like,
Megatron's
like
no, I learned my lesson. Yeah. That I'm going to leave something for me left to rule when all's said and done. I was like, oh, that was kind of cool.
It was neat because that whole exchange, I think, did, like, despite my qualm with how fast his turn happened, it also did fill in so many gaps and questions one could raise the moment he said he would side with the Autobots to take down Unicron. I think that was probably the best way they could have done that bit of storytelling, is to have Megatron just openly state everything. He's like, I am going to fight you again when we're done. And, you know, like, oh, are you gonna wipe out Cybertron like you did before? He's like, no, I want a planet to rule over this time. Yeah. It was really cool, and not to drop some hash on Dark of the Moon, but it kind of felt like a bit of a more effective way of delivering the whole thing of Megatron wanting to work with someone and then turning on them afterwards.
Mm-hmm. And also, because going back to my worries beforehand of them doing the whole, like, well, Prime has had his limit, he's reached his limit, he's not going to take any more from Megatron, and he's decided that Megatron has to be destroyed. And then when Megatron had brought up, well, you know, he said the whole thing about whatever he said of, well, this is a bit different than our last encounter, Prime. And then the last time you saw me, you were trying to extinguish my spark. And Prime was like, that's still on the table. And I was like, okay, I buy that, because it doesn't feel like they just wrote the character like, I'm pissed and, oh, well, now we're buddies. It's like, no, it's like Prime still hasn't given up on the idea that Megatron is too dangerous to let live. But yeah. if he's willing to offer his hand to destroy this dark god that's going to doom an entire race to extinction, then, well, okay, maybe then the whole my enemy is my friend cliche might actually work, because it's going to save billions of lives.
Yeah, and I don't know if you noticed, but also constantly when Megatron and Prime were in the same shot after the quote-unquote truce was discussed, Prime was often standing, like, literally about 2 inches away from Megatron at all times. Like when he said that thing about it's still on the table, he just went like chest to chest with him, and mm-hmm. And then
I didn't realize how much taller Megatron was than Prime.
Yeah, I just love that Prime had this you know, slightly movie-esque menacingness to him, but you know, to show Prime's credit, it was still so much more tempered and more believable, because he was just like, he's like, it's still on the table, we're gonna work together, but I'm gonna stand here right in your face and tell you what we're gonna do. And it was really cool, I think, that whole exchange. Also, during that exchange, I wrote something down that it just kind of struck me as funny, because at one point Megatron says, how ironic is it? And that's kind of a G1 Megatron little chuckle, is to hear him say ironic. So Frank Welker as Megatron saying ironic. I was wondering if maybe that was an intentional gag or not. Inside the base, did you notice when Megatron, when the kids are walking away and Megatron's done making fun of Raph, who, I don't even know what Raph is like, hey, you, and walks off.
Yeah.
When they're turning around, Megatron was like, oh, you. He's like, just singles out Jack. He's like, I never forget a face.
Yeah, I was trying to remember it when those two had met, and I couldn't remember without
Drill
going
Machine.
Back and watching.
It was when Jack was in that drilling machine.
How could I forget that? That was recent, too. Yeah, that was Rock Bottom. Okay.
He chose not to run the drilling machine through Megatron's face.
Right, of course.
And so I love that Megatron did a callback to that, where he was like, I remember you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was kind of cool.
My favorite part of that scene, though, was Megatron walks in, and he looks around, and the first thing I'm expecting him to say is, oh, so this is the Autobot base, or something like that. Megatron walks in, looks around, and he goes, so this is where the magic happens. I cracked up out loud. I don't know why I thought that was so funny, but that was just hearing Megatron say, so this is where the magic happens.
He was in good form this episode.
It almost made my stomach hurt. I was laughing so loud at that line. I thought that was great.
He was walking this awesome line between, you know, the monster that is Prime's Megatron, and then these little hints of almost like this classy villainness of the animated Megatron, of him just kind of like reveling in the fact that, you know, even though it was his suggestion, he does need the Autobots to deal with Unicron. He's kind of reveling in the fact that he is making them really, really, like he's getting under their skin just by being there.
Oh, and it felt, that moment felt powerful to me, because going back through the season, like all the times that they've had to prevent the Decepticons from learning their base location, and when the Wheeljack clone was in there, and it was all this really big deal, because once the Autobot base is found out, like they're screwed.
Yeah.
And seeing Megatron just strut up in there, and the expressions on all the Autobots' face, that it was pretty powerful, I have to say.
Yeah, that from that point all the way till the end of that episode, it was just this awesome, just like story heat build of stuff going on, and it was, I think the music also really helped, and just that panning shot showing him like just on the ground level, just showing him walking in through the ground bridge.
Yep.
And for some reason it was this episode and those scenes that made me realize how much I like the Megatron design. It just came off so menacing, and I've said before, I love the way that his eyes have these like Judge Doom pupils, just to make him look even more like just freaky. And there were these great moments when he was loading in the coordinates for Ratchet, when he just looks over his shoulder, and I was like, God damn, like,
yeah,
he is terrifying.
Yeah, I love that part at the end too, when they're about to walk back out of the ground bridge, and him and RC just stare at each other. Like the camera cuts between the two of them like a couple times. She's like, "After you." He's like, "Okay."
Little bow.
Yeah, yeah. That whole moment was just so tense. It was great.
Mm-hmm. And it also, I thought, was really great at kind of, to me, giving me a better basis of what kind of Megatron this is, because, you know, at first, and up until, I still think this, he is definitely a terrifying, somewhat mad Megatron, but it felt like these moments kind of felt like, you know, this old tyrant who was kind of reliving a few moments of maybe younger regalia in being able to revel in where he was, like just kind of becoming a little bit more regal, and mm-hmm. and like, you know, like an old man who's getting to a moment to be in the spotlight, kind of. And kind of letting
he was definitely eating the tension up.
Oh yeah,
because it was most of the tension was just fear and anger, and he seems to bear that on his back proudly.
Yeah,
and him just standing there, and no one wants him there. Everyone hates him. Everyone wants him dead, and he's just standing in there, just saying like, they all need me. There's nothing they can do. I'm in their base. They don't want me here.
Yeah,
he was eating it up.
Oh, so good. And going off that, just on the Decepticon end of things, there was a very interesting scene in this episode with Soundwave and Arachnid.
Yeah,
I had to watch it a few times to make sure it was Soundwave I was seeing doing this. But Arachnid, basically, she says almost not word for word, but more or less paraphrasing word for word stuff that Starscream has said, where she's like, maybe we should prepare for a future without Megatron. The moment she says that, if you look in the background and it's out of focus, which was beautiful, Soundwave just very slowly, very slightly turns to look at her after a pause.
Yep, she's like, I noticed that.
That was so good, because I was just sitting there, and she's like, maybe we should prepare for a world without Megatron. And Soundwave just like, pause, turn. And I was like, oh, wow, Arachnid, you're screwed. You just called. I mean, we've been talking about, and we've been kind of making fun of how Soundwave hasn't done much. But at the same time, in that moment, I was like, you know what? Soundwave hasn't done much this season, but you know what he did this season? He meticulously and made a point of making a living hell of the life of the last person to say they should try to figure out what to do without Megatron there.
Yeah.
And
speaking of Starscream too, he hasn't shown up at all. I'm wondering if he's going to play any role in the three-parter.
I thought for a few seconds before they revealed who it was that the purple lasers that saved Optimus were Starscream, actually. I'm not, like, truthfully, I'm not, I just for a second, because I was because that scene with Megatron in the last episode being like so ready to become a full-on like almost religious zealot of Unicron,
that would have almost been kind of cool if they went that direction.
Yeah, I was that's why I was so surprised. That I think that's part of what the swerve was for me on Megatron that made it almost a little too jarring, is it felt like a more natural progression would have been Starscream coming to help, because I was so sold on the fact that Megatron, I thought, would be just a full-on Unicron follower, like almost on a brainwashed level because of all the dark energon in his system. So I thought Starscream had come back to save Optimus.
Did Arachnid look like she had some more highlights or something this episode?
She seemed more colorful.
The blades on her back had these glowing purple lines that I never noticed before. And they may very well have been there the whole time, but I remember seeing her in the darkness, and it's like, wow, she's just like glowing. It looked really cool.
It may have been because I don't know if we've seen her in that particular control room from those angles before.
That might be
and
it.
And so
too.
It might have just been like that combination of lighting and angles doing something that we hadn't seen before, which is it was gorgeous. Yeah. I hope it happens again.
Yeah, I'm gonna go back and look. It just looked like on the helicopter blades on her back, she had this extra highlights that I hadn't noticed before.
Mm-hmm.
So, but either way, it goes back to what we've said in previous episodes. Arachnid looks really awesome at dark and in the night.
Yeah,
and kind of not so much in the daytime. But it's almost like the like that control room scene was almost like that opening scene from Transformers Animated, where all the Decepticons are just bathed in darkness and they just have this purple hue on them.
Yeah,
I got a big vibe from that. Like Arachnid there almost reminded me of Black Arachne on that bridge scene, but
absolutely, and
it was very cool.
I'm really looking forward to seeing where things go with the Decepticon hierarchy in the next episode, because I'm that little just that half turn Soundwave did. You know, I've had it called out to me before, and it's very true. Anything Soundwave does, I perhaps read far too much into, but he just looks so good doing those little motions. And
I hope that this is a hint that he's gonna do something crazy, because he's done nothing lately, and he just shows up and acts creepy for like 10 seconds, and it's such a shame. So
I'll admit though that the fact that he's done so little means that every time he does, as you said, just even 10 seconds of something, it just makes me start reading into it and reading deeper into it, like even farther than I ever should. And I've got to say, objectively, that is a great way to hook me into the character. But I will eventually hit a limit, I think. And I know other people have, some people hit their limit a long time ago. So, here's to hoping. I'll pass the ball back over to you, Gog Dog.
You guys called it last week, The Matrix.
Yeah.
Is what they're going to use against Unicron. I almost feel stupid for not even thinking about it. I'm like, what are they going to do against Unicron? Oh, yeah. Aaron? I can't remember who said it. I think it was Aaron or somebody. I think everybody was thinking it except for me. So I was like, oh, yeah. They're probably going to introduce the Matrix. And that's exactly what they did.
And to their credit, though, they didn't blow the whole wad. They didn't have him literally just like pull open his chest and like just show it. They just kind of spoke of it the entire time. And there was actually a great line there. I thought it was a great line in retrospect to what we've been saying about the dropping of MacGuffins, is that when they brought up the Matrix, Jack was like, do we really have time to go hunting down? Basically, do we have time to go MacGuffin hunting now?
Do we really have time to go on a scavenger hunt?
Yeah, and I was like, wow, Jack is noticing how much they find stuff in the field. But, it was kind of cool. I think that line was nicely self-aware. I hope it was. It was a great line.
Well, what was cool about how they tied in the Matrix is he said that it was in the previous episode that it was the original 13, who they established as the original Primes, were the ones that helped Primus to defeat Unicron, and they tied that in this episode by saying that the Matrix is the combined wisdom of all the Primes. So in essence, it's almost like they're kind of resummoning those original 13 that were able to stop Unicron before. So still not sure exactly how it's going to play out, but it was cool, kind of cool how they tied that in. Like it was that, like that is why the Matrix will be able to help defeat Unicron, because it is the combined wisdom of those that have already defeated him.
Yeah.
Instead of it just being, I'm going to open it up and it's going to blow him up from the inside.
Yeah,
which may or may not happen, but it was. I still think that it was cool how they kind of justified the Matrix's power against Unicron by tying it into what had happened before when he was previously defeated.
That totally filled in the. I think I mentioned it last prime time. That little qualm I always had is like that I was hoping they would, you know, if it is the Matrix that does it, they'll also kind of you know, make a logical connection as to why it would destroy or shut down Unicron. And that definitely covered that point, I think. Because, you know, as I said before, all we know about the Matrix is that apparently Unicron bursts when he is touched with knowledge. So now it's not like, you know, oh no, knowledge. You know, it's going to be like, no, there's an actual, there's a myth, a mythic, it's not scientific, but there's a quote unquote mythically realistic reason why the Matrix would be an effective weapon against Unicron. So I was like, excellent. That's covering bases. That's, I'm not going to say it's like genius writing, but it is thoughtful writing.
At least they took the time to explain it.
Yeah.
Instead of it just saying like the Matrix is our ultimate weapon.
They're not just covering the bullet points that we all already know. You know, they're not like, oh yeah, those Transformers fans, they'll know that the Matrix kills Unicron. We'll just say the Matrix. It's like, oh no, there's a reason. There's a to me a solid world built reason for it. Just checking to see if I can stem off that one easily. I actually have there was a single line Ratchet had that I meant to bring up before that I thought was kind of hilarious, is, have you uncovered any further signs of Unicron's emergence as Optimus Prime is surrounded by several hundred of him? I thought that line was awesome.
Yeah.
And I gotta throw it down again, man. Unicron is being portrayed in voice acting wise. He's being portrayed so well.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of John Noble. I'm a little behind on my Fringe, but if Fringe is a great show, and John Noble, he is such a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found out he was voicing Unicron, it blew my mind. I did not see that coming at all. Most people would probably know him from Lord of the Rings. Denethor. He's the king. He's the king that's just eating all with his fingers and stuff. Like, I don't care. Bring me more food, but. yeah, John Noble, he's so good. And if you would ask me who would have voiced Unicron, that wouldn't have even entered my mind. And it makes so much sense to me now.
And he's hitting all these points with the voice that, you know, I didn't think would even be thought of. I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but I mean, like, right down to the way that he says some of his S's, it has this Orson Wellesian kind of quality to it, you know, in comparison to how they were delivered in the 86 movie, like just right down to these really kind of these weird sort of chewed, like whistling S's, like that kind of stuff. Like there's moments of that, which I associate with the original Unicron voice in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So when I heard like S's like this and the descendant of Primus, I was like, oh man, like I don't know if he's been directed to do that or if this is just a coincidence, but he is hitting some Unicronic tones in his delivery. Fantastic performance, and I hope. I mean, he's a name, so I mean, unfortunately, that also means there's a good chance we won't be hearing his Unicron much after these episodes. But who knows? You know, like because you know, I would associate him along the same lines as The Rock. Like, this is probably a very expensive venture having him involved in the show.
Yeah, and it's, to be fair too, Unicron's not somebody that you want popping up every episode.
That too, absolutely.
You want to save it.
Yeah. That's just a line that I thought was really cool, and I wanted to drop some love on Unicron's voicing. Back to you, sir.
Prime giving Jack the key to the ground bridge power supply.
Yeah, I have a thing about that.
Yeah, well, for one, to go a little bit on the shallow end, they pulled kind of a movie Allspark with it being this giant Transformers artifact and then transforming down to human size. Kind of got a kick out of that.
It also kind of looks like a different key to me. That might just been an homage in the design, but it looks a lot to me like the key to Vector Sigma.
Yeah, yeah, I noticed that. I don't know. I don't know if they're going to do anything with that, because it just...
Yeah.
Why would they be using the key to Vector Sigma as, hey, we're powering our Earth machines? Well, so, who knows, but...
There was a thing there, when I watched it the second time, I watched for it, and I'm... This may not go anywhere. I'm fully ready for this not to go to anything, but the way that Prime described what it was, when Jack says, what is it, Prime kind of looked to the side for a second, and he kind of paused for a second, and he's like, it's the key to the ground bridge power supply, and I was kind of like... Is that really the key to the ground bridge power supply, or are you just saying that? Like, there's something about it where I was like, this doesn't feel quite right. Like, I mean, we'll find out probably by the next episode, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
So well, there's something odd about that scene.
Well, let's assume that it is. Like, what? How would that? How do we think that's going to play out? Because
Jack, shut down the bridge and leave us here. That's yeah. my guess. If it is the key to the power supply,
does he? So do you think that he would give that responsibility to Jack because he doesn't think Ratchet would be able to make that decision?
Possibly, or. That's the thing. It's tricky because if anything, Ratchet would be the one more likely to go through with shutting down the bridge because, you know, if it's a hard decision to be made, why would he leave it? I mean, he says, you know, I've been impressed with how much you've matured. So for sure. And Jack has matured in the show, I think, you know, I'm not going to deny that. But because of that, like to me, if it was the key to the power supply, the obvious plot connection would be shut down the bridge so Unicron can't escape or something like that. Or so Megatron is stuck here. But that would be something that Ratchet would be way more likely to do, which that combined with...
Yeah, and that's exactly what's going through my head. So I just couldn't find the obvious reason why Prime would do that would set that up for the next episode.
Yeah.
There doesn't really seem to be an obvious way. So I'm a little curious to know what this is going to play into, because it just doesn't seem to be an obvious linear path as far as... The writers decide that Ratchet can't make the decision and Jack can,
and it would be odd. Like
looking at the characters, it seems flip-flopped almost.
Yeah, and if that actually comes down to it and Jack is the one who makes the decision while Ratchet's saying don't do it, I'll be a little wigged out, I think. Like it would strike me as odd. But that's also why between that oddness and the way that Prime was acting when he described what the key was, I suspect it may be something else. I'm not going to be disappointed if it isn't. I couldn't shake that feeling when I watched. I saw this episode twice, and I still can't shake that feeling. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. Also, while they were about to leave, and I think this is going to be the screen cap for this episode, that moment where RC is looking back at Jack and the humans was awesome. Like just the composition of that shot, right before she goes for the portal, it was beautiful, and
it was almost ominous.
Yeah. Like, just the way she looked back, like, you know, like, she wanted to say something and didn't. I was like, man, like, that was a very heavy 2 or 3 seconds for me. I'm not sure if it impacted anyone else like that, but I was like, man, like, that just, combined with the music, that just has so much weight to it. Like, just that look over the shoulder with the bridge behind her backlighting her and stuff. I was like, man, that was beautiful. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because Prime looks back, too, but it didn't impact me nearly as much as the RC look back. I think it just has to do with just... The shape of her eyes, they are so much more expressive. You know, not to say that Prime's eyes are not expressive, but she was just like, there was stuff being said that was not said out loud there, which was, I could kind of feel. It was really good, I thought.
Yeah.
What about you? Anything else on your side of things?
I don't really have anything major left. I got a kick out of when they were doing the whole, like, Bulkhead was like, well, I'm not just doing it for humanity. I'm doing it for Miko.
Yeah.
And RC's like, I'm doing it for Jack. And then Bumblebee's like, it sounded just like somebody was saying fur raft through a kazoo. I was like, that's the first time I've ever been able to audibly understand what Bumblebee is saying, because that was purposely done like that, because it sounded exactly like that.
For Raph. And I was waiting for Raph to go like, oh, for me? Like, when he was walking up to the other people.
Yeah.
it's like, oh man, Raph, you're trying so hard to be involved.
Yeah. And also, Miko. And she's like, I can't remember her exact line.
She's like, if you double cross us, you won't ever forget my face.
And then, what was the line she shouted? Like, never!
And I was like, whoa. She went male vocal there for a second.
Yeah, that was... I was like, oh, man. Like, well, at least she's passionate, I guess.
Yeah. there was another line that... I have one other line that I thought was really cool. Actually, the whole thing of the way that Ratchet was reacting to Prime considering working with Megatron, I thought was really well done. And Ratchet had this one line, which is like, the past always matters.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, Ratchet is pissed. He had a few other lines, but that was the one I felt I had to write down. Like, just the way that Ratchet was going, like, the lesser of two evils is still evil. And
yeah, you know, it goes back into what we were saying before. If Megatron is really this tyrant that's done all these things, it makes me feel good to hear characters react as if this isn't just 26 episodes. that this is something that's been going on for thousands of years.
Absolutely.
And when you see Ratchet even offended at the, even for the greater good, these guys working together, and seeing him react the way he does, I start feeling that, yeah, these are characters that have been in this war of almost genocide for thousands of years.
Yeah. That's the thing, is like, I thought it gave it a really good weight, because it made it not feel like, hey, the cartoon villain's going to work with the heroes. It made it feel like the hero is thinking of working with
Satan.
Yeah, he's thinking of working with a tyrant who is responsible for millions of deaths. And I was like, all right, this has the weight. And the fact that none of the Autobots for even a second let up on Megatron, I was like, yeah, I am sold on the history this Megatron has now. This off-screen history is legitimized by this, I think.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But yeah, I mean, I think that was the theme of this entire episode, was just the tension of them being around Megatron and not trying to kill him.
Yeah.
Like the fact that they were having conversations with one another, and how even that thought of that occurring made some of them uncomfortable out of their minds. Like, it was, that was the overall theme of this episode. And it was played so well, I think. And it up to the climax of everyone in the base, it was done so well.
Yeah. I really felt it when I was watching it. It was really well done. Anything else on your end?
That's really about all I have written down that I can think of off the top of my head.
I have one still. All right. End of the episode. They're inside Unicron, pretty much. Or at least they're inside the Earth's core, which has been heavily contaminated by Unicron. There's a heartbeat echoing through the whole place. Camera pans out, farther out, even farther out, and there is a giant eyeball on the wall.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy.
Yeah, I was trying to wonder if that was one of his physical eyes, or were they, because Ratchet had made the comment about how difficult it would be to groundbridge someone inside of a sentient being. So I almost wondered if it wasn't like the 86 movie where they were inside him. He just had all this machinery and stuff going on, and it was just kind of like he has, like, internal cameras and stuff. I don't know.
I took it as the internal camera kind of thing.
Okay.
Because the way that the eye powered up, and when I looked at it a second time, like, I thought there was a little bit of reminiscence to the 86 Unicron insides design in there, which is like the cavernous but oddly veiny-like and bulbous growths everywhere. And I just love the idea that there is this giant monolithic eyeball inside one of his chambers, just, like, watching.
Yeah.
And I'd love it if... just my personal taste would be to have a scene where they're all walking and there's a giant eyeball that's like the size of just like the Grand Canyon, just slowly following them as they're walking.
Yes.
That'd be so good.
Yes.
Like, I don't know if that's in there. If it's not, I'm not going to be upset. But like, to me, just directorially, that would be such a gorgeous and magnificently haunting thing to do. So yeah, I am all ready, for episode 3. I guess the wait won't be all that long.
yeah.
We're going to hold off on recording about episode 3 until we've seen the high def encode, though, as before, because I want to have the full experience before I really start talking about it. But for the sake of... I project that if I act like I haven't seen episode 3, I'll still have a spoiler sent my way by Wednesday. So I'm going to just nip that in the bud. Anything else on your end, or are we feeling like calling it here?
I'm good on my end. I'm sure later I could probably think of something, but as for now, that's all I can recall at the top of my head that I thought was, that really struck me as discussion worthy.
Yeah. Well, stick with us, ladies and gentlemen. We might be having another recording with, at least I would like to get Aaron and Omegas' thoughts on episode 2. I just didn't, as we said before, it would have been just weird having to, It would have been uncomfortable for both sides of this to have dudes who've seen part 3 try to act like they haven't seen part 3 while discussing part 2. It would have just been unbelievably awkward. So once I've seen the leak of part 3, I'm gonna see if I can catch them and record something quick as well. It's not the first time we've had more than one primetime about a set of episodes, so there's a precedent there at least. And we will reunite to discuss part 3 once it's aired, probably a day or two after the New York Comic Con. And then I guess Primetime will be on vacation for a little while till season two starts.
Yeah, which is only, I think, 3 or 4 weeks after this.
Oh, really? So, it already has a date on it?
Yeah, it's November. Cool. So this is going to, yeah, yeah. I think it's literally a 3 week break.
Man, this feels like animated again. We're gonna run out of episodes again.
Yeah, everybody was complaining. I mean, us included, about how long of some of the breaks they took with Prime. But at the same time, we get the season two premiere less than a month after the season one finale, which is kind of satisfying. So
true. That's very true. I guess the bigger question is, will Prime toys show up on shelves before season two?
Oh man,
that's a chin stroker for me, because we're in that zone now. We're into October. I didn't think they were going to be out in October, but this is kind of where October, November, December is when I think they're going to hit. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. Until next time, though. Thank you very much, Gog. I think it's time that we inoculate ourselves so we can we can walk amongst the zombies.
Well, we need to go out. We need to get them. We need to bring them back. We need to revive them. Bring them back to the land of the living.
That's right. We're gonna save them, Gog. We're gonna save them. Gog, damn it! We're gonna save them.
I might have to give Aaron mouth to mouth.
I'll take a lot of pictures. Until then, though, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Gog Dog, this has been Vangelis, and we are Prime Out!
Add all that up, I know what the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators, and they're here to stay.